Olin, and salutations to the faculty at Nemata. It's been a while since I've posted anything in the Terma and the Turton, but here I am, and it is a rather special occasion. Today, February 2nd, is the Celtic festival of Imbolc, the coming of the light, the welcoming of the light. So according to the cross quarter calendar of the Celtic peoples, this would be the first day of spring. And of course, that corresponds beautifully with Marita's calendar. So traditionally, the Gaelic and Celtic peoples celebrated the first, second, third day in February as the moment when they observed the detectable increase of the light due to the fact that the sun is declining from its maximum position to the south at the winter solstice toward the spring equinox when it crosses the celestial equator. So from February 2nd to May 2nd is springtime in Marita's calendar, and today is the day of the Festival of Lights, or La Fête des Bougies, as they say in French. Now I'm using this occasion to make a sort of proposal to you. But before I make that, and I'm very reticent and cautious about making proposals of any kind to anybody, believe me, I am. Before I make that, I want to state a disclaimer. Shakta magic, interactive magic with the wisdom goddess, is an experiment. And like any other experiment, it involves trial and error. It involves a trajectory of learning. And this method is very, very new. It's only been in the world now for about 14 years. It's nothing. It's half a generation. And I can't say how many people, an imaginary number of people around the world are onto it. And you all have experiences to relate, results, failures, and that's the way it must be. Sometimes the experiments with the Shakti Cluster app may seem to produce nothing. Maybe they do produce results and you simply have not detected them. So this practice, as you know already, requires determination and trust in your own powers, which are always improving, and you learn from your successes and probably even learn more from your failures. But ultimately, there are no failures, because ultimately the practice becomes an inherent installation of human intelligence, and then it works reliably and consistently in the same way that your intelligence and your probity work already, you see. So yeah, I'll make a proposal of sorts. And I will, in order to do that, I need to take some time, so bear with me, to describe the context or the occasion for this proposal. So you may recall that in May of last year, I think it was around the 27th, I went to a place called Orense to have a special treatment for a cataract in my right eye, which was pretty serious. And I opted for an ultrasound treatment, which is quite different from laser treatment. And it's minimally invasive. It uses ultrasound to make a minute hole in the lens of the eye, about one-tenth the size of the hole made by a laser treatment. And then it extracts the ultrasound breaks up the protein crust of the cataract and extracts it. And in the second part of the procedure, they insert a silicone lens called IOL, an interocular lens, which is like a contact lens, but instead of putting it on your eye, it's actually in your eye. And all of that takes about 15 minutes, and it is without pain. There's no local anesthetic. They use drops for local anesthetic, but there is no general anesthetic involved. So I found the terms of that intervention acceptable. And it's the only time in my life that I've ever had any kind of surgical intervention. And you may recall when I recorded a talk from Alariz, which is near Orense, that I described the results of this treatment, which were wonderful. That was a total success. So there was an issue with my left eye, talking now, right eye, buddhi, left eye, manas. And it seemed like it would be a reasonable and logical thing to do to go and complete the procedure with the left eye. But the situation with the left eye was different. I didn't have anywhere near the occlusion due to the presence of cataracts that I had in the right eye. It was, to my mind, much milder, but there was some effect. And I remember that I had certain doubts about what the doctor said, Dr. Lorente, about the left eye, because he was saying, yeah, eventually get a treatment with the left eye. He didn't pressure me or anything. But when he examined it on two occasions, he told me that the percentage of visual capacity in the left eye was very low. It actually wasn't that low in my experience. It was didn't quite seem to match his diagnosis. But anyway, I thought, well, why not? The first experiment or treatment was so easy, painless, fast, and successful. May as well do the other because I want to have a balance in both eyes, right? I want to balance manas and buddhi. And all this time, of course, I'm working on the parinama. So I made an appointment on November 2nd, and I went in just as before for a routine procedure. So I figured it would take 15 minutes and it would work out pretty much as the other one had. And I was right, up to a point. So I go into the room, which is like the flight deck of the Star Trek, Starship Enterprise, with this huge machine, which is the it's in two parts. The ultrasonic machine has one part, very sophisticated space age looking device, and then it has the, which somehow in a computerized manner monitors and controls the operation. And then the other part, of course, is the scope or the tool which delivers the ultrasound beam, right? And it's ultrasound beam that makes a minute aperture in the lens, breaks up the cataract, sucks it out, and inserts a silicon IOL, or interocular lens. So, same thing, do it over again, expect the same results. And that's the way it went for about 15 minutes. And then I noticed that there was some kind of commotion in the room. And the doctor wasn't saying much, but he had two assistants, and then he had two other assistants at the other part of the machine, which electronically monitors everything. And they were talking back and forth, and it appeared that something had happened that didn't happen the first time. So the doctor then proceeded to do some things. So there I am lying on my back. I feel nothing. He added some more anesthetic drops to my eye. I never felt much of anything at all. And he said to me two things when he started to do this other procedure, which he hadn't done the first time. And he said, okay, keep looking at the lights. And so what he meant by that was that my eye is wide open while this is happening, and what you can see is like four lights, like four spotlights, which apparently are coming from the beam, coming from the device that emits the ultrasound beam. And at a certain point, I couldn't see those lights. And all I saw was kind of a smearing of color across my field of vision of my left eye, which was wide open. By the way, they don't put a device in it, you know, to pinch it so it stays open. It's because I don't feel anything. I have no impulse to close the eye or blink. So then he said, this might hurt a little. And when he said that, I felt on my eyeball in the upper outer corner, right, left-hand upper corner of the left eye, that he was somehow pushing on the eye. And this had never happened before. And he was pushing at two distinct points. And I felt all this completely vividly. I was vividly aware of what was going on. And it did hurt a little, but not much. So I lay there, bear in mind that my head is taped down to the table with scotch tape, right? So I can't move my head because obviously I wouldn't be able to do it. And as he was doing whatever he was doing and kind of communicating in shorthand phrases with his team, I saw these smears of color, bluish white smears going across my eye, which I never saw anything like that the first time. And then I saw something really, really, which I say, that I had never seen before. I saw come into the field of vision of my left eye something like a scab or a crust, like a flake of rust. And it was largely kind of orange amber, dirty orange amber, and it had black edges around it. And it was enormous. The moment that it flashed across my field of vision of that particular eye, it covered half or more than half of the field of vision. It was this enormous, shall I say, it was a big flake And what it actually was the nucleus of the cataract that they were intending to remove. So apparently they had broken up a good part of it, but they hadn't been able to break up the nucleus, which was like the hardest part of it. And that's what I saw, and I saw it vividly. And as I say, it was like a flake, of like a flat flake of a cornflake or a piece of rust that you might have chipped off a rusty machine. And it had a main body that was sort of roughly rectangular, and attached to that body it had four tabs or tags. So it had those four parts, and it was big, really big. And I saw it vividly. So then they continued. They were obviously not happy with what was going on. And the operation went on for another 10 minutes beyond what it had gone on before. So I wasn't sure what was happening, but I knew that something had gone wrong. So then he told me to get up, and they took the band of cellophane off my head, and I sat up and walked out of the operating room, right? But unlike before, the instant that I stood up and walked out of the room, I could see vividly through my right eye. As I got up and walked out and into the hallway and into the rest of his office, my field of vision was, encumbered or filled with a massive amount of debris. Floaters, small black floaters, small circles with a hollow center, tiny circles with a hollow center. I now know that to be blood. I've seen that before. That's no big problem. It dissolves after a day or so. And other erratic forms of debris. And it was as if you had been at the scene of an explosion and you were in shock and you were standing there and a building blew up that you were standing in. And all of the debris of the building is floating all around you, including the monster flake. And so a doctor tells me to come into his office. And obviously, this is about 6 in the evening, on a day when he had already done quite a few treatments, I noted that. He'd already done quite a few that day, and I had to wait for quite a while before they brought me in. And that, when that happened, I wondered about it a bit. But anyway, this was my choice. So he brings me into his office to sit down. He sits across from me, and he's obviously really in a panic. And he said to me, "There is a problem." So at that exact moment, I wasn't surprised that he said that. I knew there was a fucking problem. I held up my right hand, palm up to him, and I said, "Excuse me, doctor. With all due respect, no. There is not a problem. I have a problem." And he said, well, this is what it is. And I've already tried to reach 3 specialists in Spain who can deal with this problem. And what is the problem? Well, it's called a dropped nucleus. So what I saw, that monster flake, was the nucleus of the cataract that was in the left eye. And they hadn't been able to dissolve it with ultrasound. So I don't know what they tried to do. They somehow it evaded them. And in the procedure that went beyond the 15 minutes of the normal successful procedure, the doctor was meddling around somehow with this nucleus of the cataract, and he actually pushed it down into what is called the vitreous matter of the eye. So, you know, let me tell you this if you don't know already. Cataracts are in the lens of the eye, okay? Which is like a contact lens that nature provides over your eye. But floaters are in the vitreous matter of the eye. It's not normal for a cataract, the protein substance of a cataract, to be down there, not in the lens, but in the vitreous matter. And that's where it is. That's where it was, okay? Due to his mishandling of this procedure. They call it a dropped nucleus, and it's said to be the cardinal sin in the practice of treatment of cataracts. It's said to only happen in 0.4% of cases. I find the term dropped nucleus to be a euphemism, because I was there when this happened. I said to the doctor, when I was sitting at his desk and he was in a blue panic, he had already tried to call two specialists in Spain who perform another operation in order to deal with the consequences of this mishandling of this procedure. You get the picture? And I said, I know what happened because it happened to me. You're sitting there telling me what happened. I hear you, you're a doctor, but it happened to me. I know what happened, doctor. You know, I know that you pushed the nucleus of the cataract or made some inept movement that caused it to be pushed down where it doesn't belong, because cataracts do not occur in the vitreous matter. You got the picture? So then he said, oh, well, you know, I just talked to a colleague in Santiago de Compostela, and he's an expert, and there's only one thing that has to be done. You only have one course of action when this happens. You have to go to him tomorrow. He wanted me to go to him the next day and have what is called a vitrectomy. Now, a vitrectomy is an optical procedure on the eye in which they actually access the vitreous matter, which is not the case with the cataract treatments that I had, the one that I had already. And believe it or not, you know what they do? They go through the lens into the vitreous matter and they suck it all out. It's watery mainly. And they suck it all out. It's very complex, by the way. It has a lot of ingredients in it. Go read what's in the vitreous matter of the eyeball. You'd be fascinated. So I say they suck it all out and empty it. And then they replace it with some kind of saline solution. And that's the only way. That's a form of removing floaters, by the way. And that's the only way, in his opinion, to deal with a dropped nucleus. And he added to me, as we were sitting there at his desk around 7 in the evening, and I've got this enormous field of debris floating in front of me, he said, if you don't do this immediately, you have a huge risk, almost a sure risk, that you will lose the sight in that eye. So I said, I was very calm, really. Honestly, and I said, held up my hand again, my right hand, palm up. And I said, doctor, you have to say that. I know you have to say that. You have to say that I have to do this, but I don't have to do anything you say. And I will do what I decide to do. And he was really nonplussed by that. He didn't know how to respond. He was in a terrible panic at that moment because he had made the biggest mistake that anyone can make in that kind of procedure. Get the picture? So I'm taking quite some time to describe this in detail for your entertainment. And you'll see, I deem it necessary to do that in order to get to the conclusion and the takeaway of this little talk, which, by the way, is extremely intimate. It's not my disposition or habit to talk to anyone about these kind of matters. But it's an exceptional case, and who knows, it may be an exceptional opportunity for you there, my friends and allies and Shaktas. So, I go away, I come home, take a cab back, I get back at twilight, and I don't know, can you imagine how I felt? What was happening in my field of vision on the left side was absolutely catastrophic. Not only was there a certain degree of opacity, but there was all this debris, many floaters of many different shapes, and the monstrous floater. So, I don't know how long it took. It didn't take long, but I have a feeling after about 5 days of living with that, and living with what the consequences might be, right? I started a journal, and maybe I started on that first day, and I started to record meticulously, day by day and hour by hour, what I was going to do to correct the left eye Manas catastrophe, to correct it. I was bound and determined that I would correct it. And I used several procedures simultaneously, three primarily. I started to take a homeopathic or cell salt formula of silica, okay, because the interocular lens, IOL, is a silicon gel. And I'm happy with silica because silica is the cell salt of Sagittarius, my sun sign. Secondly, I started to do eye compresses using colloidal silver. And the third thing I did was exercises with the moon. So the first thing that came to mind was that, this is what my Rigpa told me, I didn't think it out. Rigpa said, go out there and look at the moonlight. Can't remember exactly what the moon phase was at that time. And he said, and bring the beam of the moonlight directly to your eye, as if it were the equivalent of the beam of the ultrasonic machine. And treat your eye with the moonbeam to correct the error that occurred. Now, of course, you know that I know, and I know that you know, that the light of the moon is unique because it is the only thing in the cosmos that reflects the organic light. So, in effect, my Rigpa advised me to use the organic light, the reflection of the organic light, like an ultrasonic beam, ultrasound beam, and to work on what was happening in my eye. And that's what I proceeded to do immediately. So I sat out on the front porch, or I laid out there at night under some blankets, and for anywhere from a half hour to 2 hours at a time, I concentrated on gazing at the moon with my left eye. But it was not an easy procedure, and I'll tell you why. It was extremely delicate, as I had to do two things. First thing I had to do was move my eye around, look up and down to the right and left, until I could draw the monster flake directly into my field of vision, because it was not always there. There were other pieces of debris floating around, but the main flake was not always there. So I had to very delicately move my eye so that I could pull it down into the field of vision so that the moonbeam could hit it directly. In order to help me do that, I also took a piece of dark paper and I made a small hole in it, about an inch in diameter, and I held that up. And that was very helpful, looking through that hole to focus the moonbeam where I wanted to focus it. But I can tell you, it was not easy. If you have any floaters, you know that they float around randomly. Imagine trying to catch one of those floaters and to entrain it by concentration so that it hovers in the middle of your eye so that the moonbeam could touch it, right? And the second thing I had to do, which was equally intricate and delicate, was I had to concentrate my rigpa exactly on my intention at the moment that I caught it in the beam of the moon. And the intention was, of course, to dissolve it. And I did exactly that. So I would say, after about 10 days of doing this practice, that's like 2 weeks or so since the event occurred, I managed to break up the monster flake. And at first, the way that happened was that the four tags that were attached to it, loosely attached to it, broke away from it. But then they would come together with it again and join it again, presumably because within the vitreous matter there's a kind of tension, like the surface tension on a pond of water, and the presence of the monster flake created a tension, and so the four tags attached to it would float away from it, and then they would float back and lock onto it again, like pods locking onto a spaceship, you see? And so it took a while before I could permanently keep them from locking on to the central nucleus, as it's called, the drop nucleus. And then I went full time with the moonbeam for the drop nucleus, and I broke it up. And it broke into three parts. So the tags are gone now. They dissolved somehow. And what's left are three sort of triangular remnants of the monster flake. One larger, one smaller, and one very small. And so in the succeeding weeks, as I continue to do these exercises, do eye compresses with colloidal silver and take the silica, continue to concentrate, and I could pull those remaining fragments in front of my field of vision. All I had to do was hold them there for a fraction of a second so that they were directly in the line of sight as I was looking at the moon. I had to try to picture this. I had to hold them there so that I could see them and the moon right behind them. And that's what I did over and over again. And it took longer, actually it took longer to correct or dissolve those three remaining fragments than it took to break up the main fragment. So then over time, I'm going now into the first month, December 2nd or 3rd, my birthday, coming up to January, the second month, and now this is exactly 3 months since this happened, right? So what developed in the third month from January 2nd till now is what I want to talk to you about. You see, I don't have complete closure with this event. I began to notice, probably halfway through, that there was a phenomenon, a presence in the left eye that was different from other floaters. Probably all know what floaters are, but did you know what a cobweb floater is? So a cobweb floater is not an erratically shaped chunk that may be dark or may be like a fragment of gauze. You know, the density of these floaters can be thick, in which case they're relatively dark, or it can be faint, like a little fragment of gauze. But I noticed a third type of phenomenon, and I investigated it. It's called a cobweb floater. Now, the cobweb floater is a different sort of animal altogether. You see, a cobweb floater can happen naturally, and sometimes does happen with age, due to a contraction of the vitreous matter. It tends to shrink when it gets dry or over time. This can happen to anyone. It's a condition that many people have, many older people. The result is that when the spherical mass of the vitreous matter shrinks, it pulls away slightly from the sheath of the retina. The retina is like a sheath that covers the eyeball. And as a result, it produces strain lines, like stretch marks on a body. It produces these spidery strain lines because it has contracted and pulled away from its natural proximity to the retinal coating, the retinal casing. And you can live with this. You can read about it. They're not dangerous necessarily, but they can be. Because if that condition develops further and it causes a certain degree of separation from the retinal sheath, then you're at the risk of retinal detachment. And when retinal detachment develops in a certain way, you go blind because it eventually hits the optical nerve. So I want you to understand very clearly what the situation is here. The cobweb floater, go look it up, generally is accompanied by a number of symptoms which are harmless and innocuous, and although they're irritating, they do not carry the risk of the loss of sight, right? Now, I only have one of these symptoms, which is called by various names. It's called nighttime halo. I call it flashing and beating. So as a result of the contraction of the vitreous matter, slight minute contraction, we're talking about millimeters here, from the retinal casing, you get this effect of flashes of light. And they take two forms. One of them I call the beating beads. So there are moments when I will see, you don't see the flash of light externally, it's a flash of light in your eye. So there are moments on the left side of my eye, the outside, when I will see a little bead will appear, an oval bead, and it will run up from the bottom of the eye to the top, generally. And sometimes it will run down, And it actually looks like, very interesting, you know, the color of sperm, you know, pearl jam. It's kind of pearly, but it is bright. Sometimes it's duller, sometimes it's very bright. In addition to this beating phenomenon, there are halo flashes, which are like crescent moon flashes that occur at the edge of the left side of my eye. So this is a very common symptom of the condition attended by cobweb floaters. Now, I'm telling you about all this in detail so that you can know what I'm currently doing. See, I 3 months exactly, and I don't have complete closure or final correction of this condition. And the reason why I don't is because this cobweb floater is the most interesting sort of creature. Whereas I could, with great concentration and delicacy, bring the monster flake into the field of vision directly in front of the moon, I have not been able to do this with the cobweb floater, which it behaves in a different way. Now, right now, and for some time, cobweb floater lurks in the upper inner corner of my left eye. And the tendrils and tentacles of it sometimes come down. And I can actually bring them down by drawing my eye down. See that? Making a movement, looking up and then looking down, up, down, and I can draw it down. And the tentacles are very, very fine. They're like really fine filaments. At first, when the cobweb floater appeared, there were two main tentacles, and I called it the calipers because they were like calipers. They would just come down into my field of vision and sort of like they were like crab's claws trying to grab something. And I thought, wow, this is wild. You know, I've got Charlotte's web in my left eye, right? Everything is material, right? So I noticed the behavior of it, and it's not like the other floaters. It's not solid. It's a filamentary formation that acts like a live insect. Creepy, huh? And the problem is, although I'm going to work on it with the current moonlight, which is now in waxing past the first quarter, is that I can't bring it down and hold it in the field of vision long enough to expose it to the moonlight beam, or haven't been able to so far. And also, I have a suspicion that at the base of the cobweb floater, which is the point where it would have pulled away, shrunk away from the retinal membrane, it might have captured the last part of the fallen nucleus. You get the picture. Now, that's not a happy situation for me. I don't want that to be the case. If it is the case, I'm going to work on it. I'm speculating, but I'm assuming that now it is the case. And so my objective now is to see if I can subject the cobweb floater all the way down to its root. I can't get the root out where I can see it. But I haven't been able to get the root out where I can see it yet. And also, dissolving the cobweb filament, which is very wavy and thin, is not the same as dissolving the other fragments, which I successfully manage, you see. So According to the experts, according to Dr. Lorente, if I had not gone the next day or immediately to one of the three specialists in Spain to have the vitrectomy performed, according to him, it was inevitable that I would lose the sight in that eye due to the presence of the dropped nucleus. Now, that's his narrative. And as I said to him in his office, and I was not nervous, I was not upset, I was sad, but I was not angry even. I said, "Doctor, fine, you have to tell me that, but you do not decide what I do. I decide it." So the final phase, which I'm looking at now, and I'm going to be practicing up until the full moon, so anticipate the moment of the full moon with me. If it's clear here at night, I'll be laying on the upper landing of the house with the roof window open, bringing the beam of the full moon to the cobweb floater and see what happens. I don't know what else to do. It worked so far. Couldn't it work with that? Now, the situation is ambiguous. I want you to be perfectly clear on what I'm describing here. Anyone of my age or even earlier age can have a displaced retina. That can happen as a result of age. According to the doctor, the risk of that happening is much higher in the case of a so-called dropped nucleus, you see. That's their narrative. And so far, I've been able to override their narrative, and I've been able to treat this consciously and intentionally. Now, as I continue, you have the full picture of the situation. You know exactly the condition, the phenomenon that's happening in my eye. And you know what I intend to do. So I invite you to do it with me, if you don't mind. Now, timing parameters are important here so that we're coordinated, synchronized, like a SWAT team or Marines on a terrorist project, right? So it's now the second. The full moon is on February 5th at 14 hours universal time. The next last quarter moon is on the 13th, and the new moon, the end of this shift, is on the 20th. And one thing that I've noticed is that there is a detectable difference in the focal strength of the moonbeam depending on its phase. So when it's in a quarter phase, first quarter or last quarter, it has, of course, that sharp edge. And I've detected that when it has the sharp edge, it has a higher cutting ability. When it comes in as a full moonbeam, which I'll see in 3 days if the sky is clear, that's a different effect. And I don't know exactly how I'm going to manage it, but I want you to know in that time frame that I'm looking at those different effects. So 3 days from now, on the 5th, I'll be looking at the full moon, the full capacity of the moon to reflect the organic light. And I will bring that to the cobweb floater if I can. As I said, it's a very sneaky creature. It's elusive. It looms and lingers and loiters in the upper corner of my eye near the nose, you see. I can bring the tentacles down, but I can't bring what's at the root of it down so far. So that's the challenge that I have. So if you want to coordinate with me and support me in this exercise, I'll tell you exactly what to do. Do whatever you want and whatever your Rigpa tells you. But in addition, here is my instruction. You take the Shakti Cluster app, you log on at 16, and then you conduce at 18. You know how to conduce. The way you conduce is you show her where to locate you. So you go to 18 once you're logged on, and you say, I am here in this room. This room is in this house. This house is on this property. This property is in this region. This region is in this larger region. This larger region is in this country. This country is in this part of the world. And you go out like that, step by step, and then you come back to where you are, and then you command. And once you've conduced, you command in this way. You go, looking at the Shakti Cluster, move your eyes. Practice shifting your eyes from right to left. You come down to 16 again and shift directly to the right to 14 and command Vudasi to eliminate the cobweb floater. And then shift directly to your left to 15 and demand or command Bodhi Ma to regulate, coordinate both eyes, because I do have some trouble with doubling. When my eyes are tired, if I've been writing all day, I tend to have doubling. Also, at a very long distance, like looking at the moon sometimes when I'm performing this exercise, it doubles. So the way that I see through my right eye and the way that I see through my left eye is not the same, which, by the way, is an extraordinary experience. I can sit there in the kitchen talking to Keridwen or looking around at the animals, and I am acutely aware of something that you do not normally know. I am acutely aware that I am seeing through my left eye in a different way that I am seeing through my right eye, but they must ultimately be coordinated. My right eye, by the way, is working very hard to help the left eye. But you look at 15 Bodhi Ma to command the balance and coordination of both eyes. And you just look back and forth, shift your eyes directly, horizontally, from right to left and left to right. You hit 14 Vudasi and you hit Bodhi Ma with these commands. That is the exact instruction for you to follow, no matter what else you might do. And you might have some other inspiration, or your Rigpa might give you some other instruction, and do that as well. And we start now, as soon as you hear this. So we coordinate through the full moon, the last quarter, which I repeat is on the 13th, down to the new moon. And that's how to do it. So don't be concerned. No fear. No worry. Whatever happens, happens. You know the Kalika vow. I hold to my highest desire and surrender the attainment, not precluding that it be granted to me by the power of the Shakti Cluster. So remember the Kalika vow. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know if there's anything that I can't handle and turn around. The most difficult thing that I handle, that I face, is aging. And I do the best I can, but I can't guarantee anyone that I'm aging graciously or that I like it. But as I said to Keridwen the other evening, I love this pirate meme. I'm the Métis. X marks the spot. there be treasure. But I don't like that meme so much that I want to go around with a patch over my left eye. And if that happens, I'm going to have to buy a fucking parrot. You feel me?